I'm really grateful to be able to be here today. We always love coming here, and I've got a chance to meet some visitors myself. And if you're visiting here, these are good folks. Come back. We always love being here and love our association with this church. Veterans Day, wonderful time to be thankful for those who have served before. My grandfather was in World War I. My brother served during the Vietnam War, although I don't give him much credit because he spent that time at Homestead Air Force Base, which is in Miami. He still gets credit, but we're grateful for the service of so many. You know, wars are terrible things, but they bring out great stories. And battles bring stories of all kinds and sorts, stories of great courage and stories of cowardice, stories of great victories and also a defeat, and sometimes folks just trying to stay alive. Yeah. But I want to talk this morning about some of the battles that we face, not military battles, but the battles that all of us face in life. But as background for that, I want to talk about a battle from the Old Testament. I love Bible stories, and hopefully not because I get tired of the main ones, but I like obscure Bible stories. I like lesser known Bible stories, and sometimes there's some amazing gems in some of those lesser known stories as well as the well known stories. And I want to talk a little about one of those today. We'll start off with the familiar part of the story, which is in Numbers chapter 13. So if you're a Bible reader or a student of the Bible much at all, you've heard this story before, this part of the story. And this is as the Israelites were coming out of Egyptian bondage, and they were moving north. They had paused for several months at Mount Sinai, where they'd received the law. And now they're moving on from there and moving north. And they're on the brink of the conquest of Canaan. They're right at the southern edge of the land that God is going to give them. And they're preparing for their military conquest of this land. It's going to be the fulfillment of promises that went all the way back to Abraham. And now it's about to happen. And so in preparation for that conquest, they send spies into the land. And we read about that starting in verse 25 of Numbers chapter 13. And when they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told him, saying, "We went to the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." However, don't you love it when there's a however? However, the people who live there are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large, and moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev. That's the south. And the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country. And the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with them said, "We are not able to go up against these people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people we saw there are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim." The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim, which is giants. "And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so were in their sight." The Israelites and the giants. Well, we know how that turned out. The people believed the report of the 10 spies. We can't fight giants. They're bigger than we are. The land is fortified cities. Everywhere we look, there were strong enemies. There are enemies in the south, enemies in the hill country, enemies by the coast, enemies. You know, they're big. In fact, in case you didn't notice, their emphasis on the size of the enemy is it's mentioned four times in six verses that they're big. You know, did we mention that they're big? You know, and by the way, they're really big. You know, and they were just, you know, they were overwhelmingly impressed with the giants. Now, I don't want to minimize that. These guys were big. Hundreds of years later, we'll meet one of their descendants, a guy named Goliath. Goliath apparently was a pipsqueak. He was only slightly under 10 feet tall. Some of these guys apparently were bigger than that. And, you know, that's pretty impressive. In fact, we'll find a little later, we're introduced to one of the kings of the giants, a guy by the name of Og, which is a great giant name, isn't it? Yeah. I don't remember what, in Jack and the Beanstalk, did that giant have a name? I don't remember, but Og would be a good name for a giant. Yeah. So there's a king named Og, and we're not told how big he is, but we're told that his bed was 13 feet long. And maybe he was, you know, an overachiever, just like sleeping in a big bed. But I got a feeling if his bed's 13 feet long, he's probably a pretty good-sized guy. So these were giants. But when the Israelites saw the giants, they said, we can't do it. Never mind the fact that God had said they could. Never mind the fact that, you know, 400 years or much more than 400 years of their history had been leading to this moment. But then when they saw the giants, they said, we can't do it. And so they didn't. So it's interesting. They said, we can't do this. And so God said, okay, don't do it. They hadn't really carefully considered what the alternative to that was. You know, they're in a desert, and God said, okay, just stay in the desert then. And that's what they were going to do for the next 40 years till all the adults died. Later on, at the end of that 40 years, of course, they're going to try this again. And when they try this again, they strategically do not approach the country from the south that same way. They actually cross the Jordan River, go up the east side, and they're going to enter the land in the middle at Jericho. We remember that story. But there are giants on that side too. That was not completely a giant-free route. That's where the guy lived with a 13-foot bed, was on that east side. And they encountered him and defeated him as they were approaching from that side 40 years later. It's interesting, when they did go into Jericho 40 years later, and they sent the spies went, and the spies talked to Rahab, the woman who hid them at her house. And it's amazing what these spies found out that the first spies didn't find out, because they didn't talk to anybody. They just hid in the bushes and looked at how big the giants were. But when these spies, 40 years later, actually talked to somebody who lived there, They must have just been blown away by what she said. Here Rahab, an inhabitant of Jericho, says, we know you guys are out there. We're terrified of you. Our people are terrified. Because, and she said, we've heard two things. There were two legendary stories that were being told about these people who are out there, the Israelites. Number one, they knew about what God had done to the Egyptians. They had heard the Red Sea story. Okay, so the people of Jericho knew the Red Sea story. That was 40 years before. And she said, the other thing is, we heard what you did to Og. We heard you guys are giant killers. Isn't that interesting? They were terrified of the giants. Didn't know that the giants were scared of them. So those 40 years later, of course, things go much better. And we read an interesting commentary or description of that in Joshua chapter 11. We're being given, in Joshua chapter 11, we're being given a summary of their conquest of the land. Obviously, they didn't conquer the whole land all at once. You know, they had to kind of enter at some point and gradually spread out and conquer all these people sort of one at a time. And so Joshua chapter 11 is a summary of those conquests. But one particular part I want to read in verse 21 that it makes a point of pointing out to us. Then Joshua came at that time and cut off the Anakim from the hill country, from Hebron, from Deborah, from Anab, and from all the hill country of Judah, and from all the hill country of Israel. Joshua utterly destroyed them with their cities. There were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel. Only in Gaza and Gath and Ashdod some remained. That's going to be Goliath's ancestors. So it makes a point of saying they not only conquered the land, want to make sure you know they conquered the giants. They defeated the Anakim. What had changed in the meantime? Were the Israelites better trained now than they were before? Did anything about sitting out in the desert for 40 years better prepare them to fight giants? No, the only thing had changed was their attitude. The only thing had changed was their faith that God would really do what he had said he would do. They defeated the Anakim. Nothing had changed. But the part of the story that's my favorite part, we find in chapter 14 of Joshua, as we're given more detail about what I just read, about them conquering the giants, we're given what I think is just an amazing detail about that story. It's a conversation between Joshua and Caleb, and then what happens after that. Remember Joshua and Caleb? They're the two spies who said we could take the land. They're the only two surviving adults from that whole incident. Everybody else is dead. It means, and we're going to find out, Caleb's going to mention that he was 40 years old at the time they were spies. So he's now, in fact, he's now 85 years old because we're going to be 5 years into the process of conquering all the people in the land. That means Joshua and Caleb, these two old timers, they're at least 20 years older than the next oldest person in the whole country. There's at least a 20-year gap between Joshua and Caleb and anybody else because all the other adults had died in the wilderness. Only Joshua and Caleb had been allowed to live. And so only those who had been 20 and under at the time the first spies were sent are still alive, except for Joshua and Caleb, who had been 40 at the time. So it must have been really kind of strange to be that much older than everybody else. And so it's interesting to hear a conversation between Joshua and Caleb at this point. Verse 6 of chapter 14, then the sons of Judah drew near to Joshua and Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, says to Joshua, you know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me at Kadesh Barnea. Isn't that great? In front of a bunch of people, and Caleb says to Joshua, you and I are the only ones that know what happened that day. But you remember what happened. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought back to him what was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear. But I followed the Lord, my God, fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance to you and your children forever, because you have followed the Lord, my God, fully. All right, so you get that. Caleb says to Joshua, you remember that day. You remember that it was a good land, but the people wouldn't do it, even though I was faithful. And of course, he knows Joshua was faithful. And he says, you remember that God said to us, you can have the land that you walked on. That land where you went as spies, one day will be yours because you believed when nobody else did. And so Caleb's reminding Joshua of what God had said 40 years before. You remember, he said, we could have this land. And now the Lord has let me live, just as he spoke, these 45 years from the time the Lord spoke this word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness, and behold, I'm now 85 years old today. I'm still as strong as I was the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now, for war and for going out and for coming in. I don't know if it really was or if he just thought it was, but he said, I'm as strong now as I was. I'm not sure many 85-year-olds would say that, but he says, I'm as strong as I was when I was 40. I'm just as ready to go. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I shall drive them out as the Lord has spoken. So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, till this day, because he followed the Lord, the God of Israel, fully. Now, the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba, for Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. And then the land had peace. So Caleb says to Joshua, you remember what God said. God said we could have this land. I want it. I want the land that God promised. I want the land we spied 45 years ago. I want that part. Caleb, you're 85 years old. Do you remember that that is, in fact, where the giants are? That will be the hardest part of the land to conquer, because there really are giants there. They didn't make that up. Yeah. Caleb, why don't you take this? We got some ground over here. Those people are they're sissies. They won't fight. You can just take it from them. Or maybe over here, here's a little spot we've already got pretty much conquered. Why don't you take that land over there? Caleb says, no. I want the giants. I want the land where the giants are. You know, you have to appreciate Caleb's spunk, but also his determination, and maybe just 40 years of grit in his teeth, that he'd been hating those giants for 40 years for what they cost him 40 years of his life. They'd cost a whole nation, you know, its possession. And I wonder if he, you know, had just spent every day thinking about those giants. So that when the time finally came, he said, I want the giants. I want the land where the giants are. Or maybe it was just to prove he was right. You know, just to prove they should have listened to me. We could have done this 45 years ago. But Caleb wanted the land where the giants were. And he and his men defeated him. In fact, they make a point of saying that the town that the Jews called Hebron had another name before that. It had been called Kiriath Arba, because Arba was the name of a man who was not just a giant. He was the greatest of the giants. And Caleb said, that's the town I want. That's going to be my hometown. The hometown that's currently the home of the greatest of the giants. That's going to be my town. And it was. You know, we still face giants. Oh, not that kind of giants, thank goodness. But we still face obstacles and problems that appear gigantic to us, that appear insurmountable. There are times when we may feel like giving up without a fight, because it's obvious what the outcome would be. But maybe Caleb could teach us a few things about that. You know, sometimes we worry needlessly. Probably a lot of the time we worry needlessly. Often things are not as bad as we anticipate after all. Sometimes the dread of something, or often the dread of something, is far worse than the thing dreaded. I remember as a kid, I don't know, some of you who are older may remember this too, they used to give us shots at school. We get these booster shots at school. They would line us up in the hallway, you know, and you go one at a time into a little room where they would give you shots. And schools used to be noisier than they are now. Now they would try to tone down the noise, but I remember the hallway of that school. You could hear kids screaming all the way down the hall, you know. And you're standing in line, you know, inching closer to your doom as scream by scream you move closer to the nurse's door. And I remember just almost hyperventilating myself standing in the hallway. Just, you know. In fact, I wish I hadn't even brought it up. I kind of got chills just remembering that. But at some point, in the wisdom of about a fifth grader probably, I realized that dreading it does not make it any better. You know, you're going to get your shot. Your turn's going to come. So just don't think about it. You know, try to tune out the screaming, and don't think about it till it's your turn. The dreading really doesn't help any. You know, and sometimes too, we need to make sure we've got the right information. And that's what happened to the spies. You know, they got part of the information. You know, they could see that these guys were big. They had no idea that those guys were scared of them because they just didn't get enough information. So quite frankly, often we worry needlessly, or certainly over worry. Another thing that I notice is that when they got to looking at the giants, they didn't care about the fruit anymore. You notice that? They're carrying a big old cluster of grapes. Earlier in the story, it says that they were carrying a cluster of grapes that was so big and heavy it took two men to carry it. I don't know that I can even imagine that. I've seen some fairly decent-sized clusters of grapes, but I've never seen one that it would take two men to carry. But once they saw the giants, they forget about the grapes. There are giants in there. And they focused on the giants, and then nothing else mattered. And it was interesting, too, how their negative thoughts bred more negative thoughts. It's interesting they said, we're grasshoppers in our sight. We look like grasshoppers to us compared to them. Now, really? Now, these guys are big, but they're not that big. You're grasshoppers compared to them. And it's interesting, too, the things that they, as they were explaining to, as the 10 spies were explaining why they weren't going. And once that decision was made, as Moses tried to talk them out of that decision, and they explained why they were sticking with that decision that they weren't going, they said a series of things. And it's interesting how they say these things, how kind of each statement gets a little worse. So they said to Moses, "We wish we had died in Egypt." Really? Well, you're not dead yet. We wish we had died in Egypt. Or we wish we had died out in the desert, with our parents. God has just brought us here so that we can be killed by the giants. That's why God has brought us here. Really? Our families are going to be the plunder of these giants. Let's go back to Egypt. Yeah, because your ancestors loved it there for 400 years. Let's go back to Egypt. Hey, I got an idea. Let's kill Joshua and Caleb and Moses and Aaron too, and pick new leaders and go back to Egypt. These guys are leading us the wrong way. It's just like, whoa. So all those are listed as statements, one right after another. It's like, whoa, guys, slow down a minute. Take it easy. Let's think about this for a minute. But how once they got to looking at the giants, there's just one thing after another, and things just got worse and worse. They overlooked an overwhelming fact that made all the difference and was illustrated in the beautiful psalm that we read a few moments ago. And it was the most important thing, and that was that God was with them. Yes, there were giants. Yes, there were. There really were. But God was with them. Joshua and Caleb had said back in Numbers 14, "The Lord is with us. Do not fear." But they couldn't look at God for the giants. They were so busy looking at the giants that they didn't look at God. It is reminiscent of what David would say hundreds of years later when he faced a descendant of these characters, when he faced Goliath, when he said to Goliath, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you with God. And that God is with me," which changes the odds. It changes the balance considerably. There are still giants in the Promised Land. There are still obstacles in the path to the abundant life. From just the everyday obstacles that come from trying to be a Christian, to all the different obstacles and giants that individuals face. And they vary from people to people. Some might struggle with peer pressure and acceptance. Some might struggle with alcohol or drugs, could struggle with various personal habits, sexual issues, could struggle with a materialistic world and the pull that has on us, could struggle with personal loss or health issues, or on and on we could go with the various things that individually we might struggle with. But how do we face the giants? Well, you have to face them one at a time. David did really well fighting them one at a time. We have to realize that they're opportunities. The Israelites saw the obstacles while Caleb saw the giants as an opportunity. We can't be afraid to think big and to ask God for help with big things. You know, the question sometimes is not what I can do, but what can God do? I love a story I heard, I guess, a couple of years ago. This really happened in Dyersburg in West Tennessee. It was a 92-year-old lady who was driving her car down the street in Dyersburg. A robber jumped in the front seat of the car with her and demanded money. She said no. And he said, "I'm going to kill you." And she said, "I'll go to heaven and you'll go to hell." He was a little taken aback by that. And then she proceeded to say, "Jesus is here in the car with us. He goes with me wherever I go." And the robber began to cry. And she talked to him for about 10 minutes about her faith and about God. And at the end of that 10 minutes, she gave him all of her money, which was about $10, and he got out of the car. She told him not to go spending it on whiskey, but to do something good with it. He kissed her on the cheek and got out. Isn't that great? Oh, by the way, she had gotten him to tell her his name and where he lived, too. So. But, you know, she just faced her giant. And with God on her side, she just proceeded to courageously deal with it. You know, God was displeased when the people allowed the giants to stop his plans. God has big plans. He had big plans and dreams for the Israelites, but the giants scared him off. You know, the difference between the Israelites, between those spies and their descendants, was how they looked at the giants. One group allowed the giants to discourage them and scare them off. The other group allowed the giants to fire them up and cause them to grow in their faith. Or another way of describing the difference was that one group lived with the grit of the desert in their mouths until they mercifully died, while the other group entered the land flowing with milk and honey. Both groups got their wish. Well, what happens if we fight the giants and we lose? Well, what happens if we don't fight the giants? We still lose. I love a passage that's in Psalm 37. One of my favorite passages says, "The steps of a man are established by the Lord, and he delights in his way. When he falls, he shall not be hurled headlong, because the Lord is the one who holds his hand. I've been young, and now I'm old, yet I've not seen the righteous forsaken." I love that. I love that image that when we stumble and fall, which we will, God's holding our hand. I don't know what giants you're facing today, but I hope that you'll remember that you don't face them alone, that God is our helper and strength. Joshua and Caleb said, "We should by all means go up. Do not fear the giants. The Lord is with us." This morning, if we could encourage you in some way, if you need to become a Christian and have not done that, we would encourage you to make sure God's on your side, because there are giants out there. There really are. But with God on our side, we can overcome giants. Or if you've drifted away from Him, if you've been looking more at the giants than at God, we'd encourage you to come back, and we'd love to pray with you or for you. If we can help you in any way, we'd encourage you to come as we stand together and sing.